Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Rebuttal Podcast, where we break down cases, calamity, and chaos in the legal field. I am once again your host, Reb Mazel. Back to it, back to the business, standing on business, standing our ground, if you will, which segues us so perfectly into the topic of today. This episode is going to be kind of a two-parter, but not really. I'm not going to label it as that because you will be able to listen to both without the other. But it is a really great foundational step to the next episode we are going to release about the castle doctrine and stand your ground laws and the legal atmosphere and clusterfuck surrounding the protection of your home and self-defense in general, okay? I'll just leave it there. And who doesn't want to start off a two-episode kind of series on a topic with a booby trap? I do. I love the boobly-doobly's, okay? A nice, good, old-fashioned bamboozle, Wile E. Coyote, Looney Tunes booby trap. Let's get into it. Some of you may listen to other true crime podcasts. That's fine. You hate me, whatever. Hello, Simba. Welcome. If you do, you may have heard of this case because it was covered in the show Criminal, which is fantastic, done very well. I am a fan. But y'all don't realize the legal hullabaloo that has risen, that has started from booby traps, from people setting fucking absolute bamboozling situations for potential intruders, for people they hate, et cetera, right? What are the legal ramifications, okay? And what are the tragic sometimes, but sometimes kind of silly stories that still happen to this day? All the fucking time. Mostly in like a lot of rural places, okay? In a lot of towns that you can imagine this shit would happen in. More power to them, right? To the people, but assume the risk, right? Assume the risk. Let's hear about a few. The last headline that I saw about a booby trap was from December 2023, a few months ago, okay? Quote, man rigs property with Indiana Jones booby trap after losing home in a lawsuit. A man lost his Oregon home as part of a lawsuit, then rigged the property with an Indiana Jones-style booby trap, a round hot tub ready to roll, out of, quote, bitterness, federal prosecutors say. So quite literally a hot tub about to spin, okay? Down, I'm assuming an elevated surface, crashing into anyone who entered. You have to laugh, right? The ingenuity itself. I love when people sample great things from fantastic movies. This was kind of a slay. I'm sorry. A rolling hot tub, an Indiana Jones style rolling hot tub. I would have paused and been like, honestly, slay. Kind of cunt. Gregory Lee Rodfeld, 72. This man is 72 years old. The petty never leaves. Planted other booby traps inside and around the home, including animal traps and a homemade shotgun device that fired and struck an FBI bomb technician, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Oregon. The discharged shotgun shell left the agent's leg profusely bleeding and sent him to a hospital where an X-ray revealed a pellet stuck below his knee in September 2018. Rodfeld rigged that former property with the deadly devices after learning his old home was going to be sold, according to prosecutors. Quote, fueled by anger and bitterness, Rodfeld booby-trapped the property with intent to seriously injure someone. You don't say. I don't think he wanted to serve hors d'oeuvres and shake hands. No, he did not. In August 2018, Rodfeld visited his former Oregon home while on pretrial release on separate assault charges in Arizona. Okay, so it's giving committed felon. It's giving committed. It's giving convicted. It's giving, right, driven. Consistent. Consistency is key. He convinced Arizona officials to allow him to travel for legal proceedings connected to his Oregon home, but he made it too late. By the time he arrived, a court-appointed person was preparing to sell the home, prosecutors said. This made Rodfeld angry. The next day, the court-appointed individual and an investigator drove over homemade spike strips placed in the home's driveway and spotted a sign, quote, warning of improvised munitions. Okay, well, there was a sign, right? Like, no trespass, like, beware of dog. I'm kidding. This is illegal as fuck, and we're going to get into why. FBI agents and Oregon State Police bomb technicians responded to the property on September 7, 2018, and faced an array of traps. An array. Including one much like a scene from the movie Indiana Jones, Raider of the Lost Ark, an affidavit says. As they walked up to the home, they noticed a hot tub on its side near a gate, according to prosecutors, who said FBI technicians realized it would roll toward whomst ever opened the gate. Rodfeld later said in an interview that the hot tub trap was set up like the stone rolling down in the Indiana Jones movie. So he literally goes, yeah, they're right. In an interview, he was like, no, yeah, they spot on. Thank you for getting my reference. I appreciate that. Big fans too. Dead. I'm dead. Yeah, maybe don't give interviews and confirm that. From his public defender's like, are you fucking kidding? Really? Yeah, no, well, they were right. Like, what other movie is it going to be from? Come on now. When an agent bumped into a wheelchair sitting in the front entryway, it triggered the shotgun device that fired a shell at the FBI bomb technician. Rodfeld went through great efforts to set intricate and deadly concealed traps to prevent FBI agents from doing their job. These were no joke, the prosecutor added. I'm clearly seeing that. I don't think he intended to giggle. All right. Goddamn. He's like, no, yeah, I'm standing on fucking business. Is he a Sagittarius? Felt. Rodfeld was sentenced to 12 years and 6 months in prison on December 6, 2023 in the case. In a sentencing memorandum, the court wrote, quote, although Rodfeld's conduct was extraordinarily stupid, juvenile, and reckless, he never intended to harm law enforcement. Rodfeld's prison sentence will be followed by 3 years of supervised release. But yes, he is currently sitting in federal prison over this booby trap situation. Which, of course, when I saw this article, okay, come up on my feed, I thought, yeah, the people, and when I say the people, I mean my people, and when I say my people, I mean my Rebuttal Pod listeners, need to be up to date on booby trap law, okay? The boobily traps, okay? The boobily doobilies. Because, you know, although this is funny, all right, in a certain sense. Yes, yeah, someone got injured, RIP. They're fine now, I'm assuming. They probably got physical therapy. They probably bitch about the knee. They probably tell this story to every fucking friend. You know what I mean? Like, I would. Are you kidding? If I got bamboozled, if I got frick-frack patty-back by a shotgun sitting in a wheelchair that I bummed into doing my fucking job, okay, that a 72-year-old was able to rig, including a massive fucking hot tub about to hit me like Indiana Jones, I would be insufferable. You would never stop. I would yap about this shit till the day I die, okay? Kind of tough. It's kind of fucking tough, all right? I decided that the Rebuttal Pod listeners needed to know really the ins and outs of booby trap law and really where these issues, controversies, became so contentious, okay? It's booby traps, the boobily doobilies, have sparked public outrage and not for the reason you might think. The boobily trap scenario always comes up in the context of when someone is trying to protect their own home, okay? And the issues surrounding it are the same types of heated discussions that you might hear from the brain rot bitches who defend the NRA and shit, right? Who are like, my Second Amendment rights bear, you know what I mean? Like those, like the yapping, yapper dappers, okay? But I like this discussion because it is so much less fucking stupid. And this one actually is, you know, talking about a legitimate scenario where the interplays of actual self-defense and the public interest in caring about life more than we care about fucking property comes into play. So if you know about this case already, sit tight. I promise you it's worthwhile to listen a little more because we're going to talk about more than just this one. But it is indeed Katko versus Briney. The infamous, the famous, the mildly funny case that every single law student has had to debate in a classroom with a lot of people who have a lot of opinions about it. Okay? And even though, yes, now, what, 50 years? Over 50 years since this case was decided, law students are forced to have an opinion about it in class. At the time that this case was decided, the entire nation had strong fucking opinions about it. And it came out of a bumfuck little county in Iowa. All right? So, you know, I love a small town hometown business. Okay? A small town hometown chat, tea dispute. And that's exactly what this is. And it is contentious, okay? These people fucking hated each other. Okay, we're getting into it. Marvin Katko lived with his wife and worked regularly as a gasoline station attendant in Eddyville, Iowa, 7 miles from a very particular, very interesting old house. He had observed it for several years while hunting in the area and considered it, as any reasonable person would, to be abandoned. He knew it had long been uninhabited, and in 1967, the area around the house was covered with high weeds. The outbuildings were dilapidated. It looked like no one had been there for years. Prior to July 16, 1967, Marvin and his friend McDonough finally decided to check out the house. And when they were there, they found several old bottles and fruit jars, which they took and added to their collection of antiques that they loved and loved to see grow. However, on July 16, 1967, when they decided to go back for their second trip to explore that house, at about 9:30 p.m., they arrived to the property. They entered the Hold house by removing a board from a porch window, which was without glass. While McDonough was looking around the kitchen area for more jars, more antiques, our boy Marvin went to another part of the house. As he started to open the north bedroom door, a shotgun went off, striking him in the right leg above the ankle bone. Much of his leg, including part of his tibia, was blown away. Only by McDonough's assistance was plaintiff able to get out of the house and, after crawling some distance, was put in his vehicle and rushed to a doctor and then to a hospital. He remained in the hospital for 40 days. Marvin's doctor stated and later testified that he seriously considered amputation of the entire leg, but eventually the healing process was successful. Some weeks after his release from the hospital, Marvin returned to work on crutches. He was required to keep the injured leg in a cast for approximately a year and wear a special brace for another year. He continued to suffer from debilitating pain throughout this period. There was undenied, undisputed medical testimony supporting the fact that Marvin had a permanent deformity, a loss of critical human tissue, and a shortening of his leg. So who pulled the trigger? The answer is nobody. 10 years prior to this fateful night, Bertha Briney inherited it in 1957. It was her parents' farmland in Mahaska and Monroe counties in Iowa. Included in this inheritance was the 80 tract of land in southwest Mahaska County where her grandparents and parents had lived. No one had occupied the house thereafter. Her husband, Edward, attempted to care for the land, but he wasn't great at it. He kept no farm machinery thereon, and the outbuildings became dilapidated. For about 10 years, from 1957 to 1967, there occurred a series of trespassings and housebreaking events with loss of some household items that the Brineys apparently still kept at this abandoned-ass house, the breaking of windows, and, quote, messing up of the property in general. The latest break-in incident, messing up of the property, had occurred on June 8th, 1967, about a month prior to when Marvin took his shot at it. And the Brineys were fucking fed up. They had, through the years, boarded up the windows and doors in an attempt to stop the intrusions. They had posted no trespassing signs on the land several years before 1967, and the nearest one was still there, about 35 feet from the farmhouse. It was big. It was large. It was there. On June 11th, 1967, the Brineys said, "All right, we've had enough. Let's do something a little more serious to really send the message here that people need to get the fuck off of our land that we never go to and don't use and no one lives on." So they got an idea. After Mr. Briney cleaned and oiled his 20-gauge shotgun, the power of which he was well aware of, the Brineys took it to the old house where they secured it to an iron bed with the barrel pointed at the bedroom door. It was rigged with wire from the doorknob to the gun's trigger so it would fire when the door was opened. Mr. Briney first pointed the gun so an intruder would be hit in the stomach, but at Mrs. Briney's suggestion, he lowered it so that it would hit a potential intruder's legs. Tin was nailed over the bedroom window so that the spring gun could not be seen from outside, and no warning of its presence was posted. Mr. Briney would later testify that he did it because he was mad and tired of being tormented, but he didn't intend to injure anyone. Right. He also gave no explanation of why he used a loaded shell and set it intentionally to hit a person already in the house instead of maybe a warning shot at the wall. Marvin Katko filed a lawsuit against the Brineys for damages resulting from the serious injury he suffered from the shot from that 20-gauge spring shotgun set by the Brineys in a bedroom of an old farmhouse which had been uninhabited for several years. And if you are watching this on YouTube, you will see the actual wire that was used to set up the shotgun in the Brineys' farmhouse, the dilapidated abandoned farmhouse. Okay. It is now an artifact. I'm not sure where it's held at this point, but it does exist. All right. They kept the fucking wire. Who knows why? But there is an individual, okay, a man who was interviewed who owned the Iowa property where the legendary farmhouse once stood. And is the reason why anyone knew that this fucking wire still existed? Because, of course, lawyers tracked this person down and was like, "Hi, can we interview you about this case?" And they were like, "Sure, you want to see the fucking wire?" And they were like, "What?" And they were like, "Sure." So this person said, his name is Jim, okay, fake name, Jim, quote, "Well, the Brineys were a little strange. They used to leave food in the house because they thought the ghosts of Mrs. Briney's mother and father lived there. They left the house fully furnished, the table set, etc. They left food in the cupboard behind the table, all that, even though they had never lived there." So I think the reason why they were so pissed about people trespassing is because they genuinely believe that their ancestors were living in this house, which is like another level. Like, there's layers to this. Okay, there's layers to this that are little bonkiesies, little bonkers. The Brineys set the shotgun trap, right? Because the abandoned house had been repeatedly broken into. And the major issue in this case for so many people is, well, why didn't they just take all their valuable shit out of the fucking house? Okay, like, that solves your problem. Just leave it fully empty so then when people break in, nothing's gonna happen. Well, that answers that question that nobody really got to the nitty-gritty of in the trial, okay, in that case, probably because their lawyer finally had a pulse and clocked in and was like, maybe if we tell the jury that Mrs. Briney literally thinks that her mother and father's ghosts live in this house and that they need to keep it fully furnished and stocked with food and valuables, and that's why they never took their shit out. Maybe that's not going to go over well. Like, maybe the jury's going to be like, okay, these people are insane in the membrane. Like, no, we're done. Thank God the lawyer clocked in. But that left that big gray area open for us to all debate it for 50 years, when in reality, all anyone needed to do was to ask this guy who knew them and was like, no, yeah, they were for sure putting an entire home furnished and keeping it nice-ish and keeping it fully stocked with valuable things, okay, because they fully thought that ghosts were floating around and needed some cute feng shui, needed some motif, needed ambiance. The law is fucking wild. When Jim bought the house, acquired this farmhouse from the Brineys, someone asked them, right? Like, oh, like, how did you get the wire? Like, was it there? Whatever. Like, did you find it? They were like, oh, it was still attached to the bed. My wife took it off and we kept it. That was before they intentionally burned the house down because they, quote, weren't worth anything. Right. At the Briney's request that Marvin's action be tried to a jury consisting of residents of the community where the Briney's property was located, the jury still returned a verdict for Marvin Katko and against the Briney's for $20,000 actual damages for his medical bills, suffering, etc., and $10,000 of punitive damages, meaning intended to deter further conduct and punish, right? Punitive. Like, hey, you pay for his bills and also fuck off, okay? $20,000 in 1971 would be about $133,000 today. So $10,000, half of that would be like $60,000, okay? A lot of fucking money, all right? Almost $200,000, okay? For this fucking around, okay? For fucking around and finding out. On appeal, okay? The Brineys appealed this bitch all the way up to the Iowa Supreme Court. It gained a lot of national news coverage because immediately people are thinking, oh, so you're not allowed to protect your home, right? From these fucking criminals, from these trespassers. They were breaking the law and they're allowed to win. They're the ones who are benefited. These poor people had their shit broken into. Pause, okay? Use your brain, use your noggin. God damn it. At the trial, of course, the Brineys, okay, and their lawyer brought it up several a time that Marvin Katko was a trespasser, was a thief, okay? He was breaking the law and, in fact, had done so previously. Marvin Katko testified he knew he had no right to break and enter the house with intent to steal bottles and fruit jars therefrom. He further admitted on the stand that he had pled guilty in a prior unrelated case to larceny for breaking into a private building and stealing shit that was less than $20 in value, okay? He's like a petty theft for his cute little antique collection, all right? There are worse crimes, I do believe. He also admitted he had been fined $50 and costs and paroled during good behavior from a 60-day jail sentence. He done his time, okay? He done his fucking time. Other than minor traffic charges, this was pretty much Marvin's first major brush with the law, I guess. He had bumped into it once or twice, but definitely, you know, not full brush strokes. God damn. On the appeal, okay, the Supreme Court pointed out that, yeah, no, it's not our job here in this lawsuit to determine whether he should have criminal charges entered against him for the trespassing of that property. Like, that's not our job here, right? Our job is to decide whether he has grounds to sue for the injuries that he obtained while trespassing on the property, all right? Is it a homeowner's duty to keep that shit safe for even thieves, if you will? Well, we're going to find out. The main thrust of the Briney's defense at the trial and on appeal was that, quote, the law permits the use of a spring gun in a dwelling or warehouse for the purpose of preventing the unlawful entry of a burglar or thief. They repeated this contention throughout the trial, throughout the appeals, et cetera, et cetera. They were really saying, yeah, no, there is literally, this is an absolute defense, essentially. They were like, no, like, there's no, like, comparative fault here. Like, we're not asking for a lowering of the damages that you're saying that we owe to Katko. We're saying it's going to be $0 because we have every right. America, USA, USA, shotgun noise, cash register sound. Like, we have every right to blow someone's fucking leg off if they enter our home, get fucked. Which, you know, is very much a rallying cry for a lot of people. And without any further context and with just that statement, I mean, I understand that, right? Because all anyone ever fucking thinks about is themselves, okay? I have a right to protect my family from people breaking in. No, for sure. But y'all know how fucking broad those scenarios are where people enter your home. okay, without you just opening the door and saying, come in, and like putting out celery and cheese sticks. Like, there's a lot of sonars, okay, that could happen where someone guaranteed getting their fucking tibia, their tib and fib, blown to smithereens is not really something that we want to promote or encourage as a public policy matter. And if you're already gnawing at the bars of your cage to yell at me about that, let's continue on to talk about these public policy initiatives. Amazing. Tee-hee. Full disclosure, I just took a break to stuff my face with half a box of pita crackers and hummus and respond to like 80 of your guys' DMs on Instagram. Because that's time management for you. Okay. The main thrust of the Briney's defense at trial and on appeal was that the, quote, law permits the use of a spring gun in a dwelling or warehouse for the purpose of preventing the unlawful entry of a burglar or thief, end quote. They stood on business like you would not fucking believe. Because typically, you guys, okay, in court, in trial, when you are a defendant, you are an accused, especially in this case, okay, it's not a criminal case, mind you. Let me just emphasize that, all right? No one's being put on trial to be sent to the clink, to the slammer-rammer, okay? You are being sued, okay, for cash, for money, by Marvin, all right? The man whose tibia bone is now decorating your bedroom rug. He sued them in civil court. Suing them in civil court does not mean that there isn't a possibility of criminal charges on either side, okay, against Marvin or against the defendants, Briney's, being entered separately, separate and apart from this proceeding, okay? But this proceeding is not initiated by, right, like, district attorney's office or prosecutor's office who has to, you know, indict a defendant and then, you know, press charges against them, et cetera, all that shit, okay? That's not decided by the victim of anything, okay? That's all decided by the hoo-has that run that fucking very problematic ship, okay? This is simply the same equivalent of, you know, me falling to the ground after faking a slip and fall in a grocery store and suing to pay off my student loans, okay? Same difference, but very different also because of the element of, you know, I don't think anyone's going to come up to me after I slip and fall and shoot my fucking tib off, okay? My tibia, my tib. This is a completely separate and apart story and anecdote, but I just have to say it because the reason why I'm so in love with mentioning, emphasizing like the names of bones, specifically your leg, like tibia, femur, okay, is because my uncle, okay, my mom's brother, he was a Marine, a U.S. Marine. I adore him. He's really, really great, really awesome, and very funny. When my uncle Anthony was in training, okay, boot camp, whatever it is, in the Marines, he had to learn how to jump out of a plane, okay, parachute, land, the whole shibata. And he was doing that, okay, going on his test jump. And as he said it, all right, it was a bad landing. Okay, it was a bad landing. I don't know the details of why it was a bad landing. Like, I don't know if it was his fault. I don't know if it was like shit happened, whatever. But he hit the ground fucking hard. He hit it hard. He hit it hard and fast. Shitball landing, okay? And he hit the ground so hard and incorrectly that he broke his femur bone, which is crazy because if you didn't know this, your femur bone is the hardest bone in your body to break. It is fucking rock solid. It is thick, okay? To break it, I mean, the sound that it makes when it breaks is like obscene, okay? Anyone's like orthopedics, like holy fuck, like that shit's loud, all right? The reason why people who are, you know, orthopedic surgeons, the bitches who with the bones, you know what I mean? They're like jacked, okay? And they're like malleting bones in the fucking surgery room in the OR, okay? And if you're in the medical field and your eye is twitching because of how incorrect and inaccurate everything I'm saying is, have some whimsy in your heart, and I'm sorry in advance. Anywho, He breaks his femur, okay? Snaps that bitch, all right? And so he's laying there, snapped fucking femur, probably parachute floating. I mean, I can imagine this scenario. Like, if I had just jumped out of a fucking airplane, okay, and landed, not only do you have a bad landing and you're in pain and your leg is twisted, fucking pointing north, okay, and your eyes are staring south, you're like fucking fantastic. Not only that, but then your parachute has to like slowly float over you and like cover you. You're probably like, what the fuck? I mean, it's just L after L. Okay. So he's laying there, femur broken, and his CO, his commanding officer, comes over, walks over to him, looks down at him and said, "That was the worst fucking landing I've ever seen," and walked away. Which, like, right, it's boot camp. What can you do? But super funny. Okay. So funny because it's like, yeah, tough. Like, that's tough. All right. So my Uncle Anthony, the next time he's home, okay, obviously the whole family knew the story. I mean, it's, you would think, right? Like, super concerning. Like, oh my gosh, like, that's horrible. Like, recovery process, da da da. The first fucking thing that his brothers say to him when they hear about it is they're like, oh, okay, femur. Sup, feme? Oh, motherfucker, femur. Okay, feme. Okay, femur. They call him to this day. It's been decades. It's been like 50 years, not 50, maybe 40, 30, okay, since this happened. And he to this day is called feme. Like, I heard him called feme. Sup, feme? Femur, whatever. His name is femur because he broke his fucking femur, which I think is just so indicative of siblings, like 100%, and just hilarious. So that's why I'm so tempted to call Marvin Katcove Tib, solely because of that and not because I'm heartless and have no empathy, but like also Marvin Katko has passed, okay, RIP, Illy. Thank you so much for this lore. And he did end up getting his flowers. Like, he got cash. Yeah, it's super unfortunate, super pain and suffering. But like, and I understand, you know, the ethics of a lot of true crime podcasts going into, you know, the just like really, really, really gross ways in which they explain crimes and don't really talk to the victims' families and just kind of like, you know, throw a HelloFresh ad in the middle of the most audacious shit you've ever heard in your life. But I feel as though we need to sometimes know where the line is drawn between like distasteful and come on, we need to make a joke at some point. And I think this qualifies. This was like 50 fucking years ago. Okay. Big Tib. When you are defending someone, whether it be in civil court, criminal court, yada, yada, you are often arguing in the alternative all the time. Arguing in the alternative meaning that you are never backing yourself into a corner, okay, to prevent you from arguing other defenses or making other legal arguments simply because one of your arguments that you loved the most is rejected or doesn't win or whatever. Like, then you can go on to the next one. And they might be contradictory a little, okay? But the law provides for that. Like, they don't force you to stand on business to the point where you're fucked just because that business didn't really stand up and was like knocked over by the big bad wolf, okay? You can go on to the little piggies' houses, okay? Three little bitches, three little piggies, okay, went to market, okay? If they build their fucking houses, okay, the big bad wolf, blow their house away, whatever, okay? You can start with the brick fucking house, okay? You can start with the brick house. If the brick house is toppled over because the wolf sneezed hard, you can move on to maybe some mud clay, okay? Eventually straw. But the mud clay is not going to disappear simply because your brick house was kind of not vibing with the mud clay, okay? That is the best fucking analogy that I could come up with on the spot right here, right now. Thank you so much. This has been Reb Radio. Putting my whole yussy into these analogies, baby, just so y'all can understand. They repeated this contention throughout the trial and throughout the appeal. They stood on business and they were not budging. They didn't argue another alternative, essentially, to this defense, to an absolute defense. That was their argument, that they have a defense that literally cancels out everything to zero. We are innocent as fuck, and you are owed $0 because of this defense. That's what an absolute defense is under the law, okay? A qualified defense, okay, can mean something that leads to a comparative fault kind of situation, okay? So like, oh, because I have this defense, okay? Under the law, it's not an absolute one. Like just because I can say that when we got in a car crash, you were texting and driving while I was speeding, I can't say that my defense to that, okay, meaning comparative fault, whatever my defense of comparative fault, means that, oh, because you were texting and driving, that means I'm to zero, 0%, $0, da da da. No, it probably just means that there's going to be a percentage situation of fault, okay? Given. And in California, comparative fault is used in a lot of like wrongful death cases, negligent cases, et cetera, because the all or nothing thing, the gray area just, or not, I guess not the gray area, but the all or nothing thing, the black and white of fault, especially in tort cases like this, is really like, it's rare, right? To have it be where literally no one else, no other factors are contributing to the shitstorm of fuck that you're gonna have to pay someone damages for, okay? But it does happen, it can happen. But in a tort case, to basically put on the defense that no, we had every right to blow his fucking knee out with a fucking contraption and a booby trap when we weren't living in this dwelling and no one was there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and he was a thief for jars, okay, jars. Like they weren't like armed, like there was no intent to like kill, you know what I mean? So many factors for them to just stick with this defense and be very, very, very aggressive about it and be like, no, fuck everyone, ever infinity. We have every right. It's zero or nothing is crazy. Like that's crazy to me. We want to put on the defense that we think will most likely win. Okay. But sometimes, right, we're going to put on the defense that gives our client the best outcome because the client's like, yeah, no, do that one first. We're like, okay, fuck. Well, it's not really, probably I'm not going to win. We'll do it first anyway. Okay, period. So we'll put on the defense that leads to them having, you know what I mean? Like no fault, complete innocence, like complete, oh, everything's just like period, I won by, they get $0. Okay, you don't have to pay a dime in damages to this person. But arguing that doesn't cancel out or prevent the attorney, the defense, okay, from arguing in the alternative and arguing other defenses that might contradict that first defense you just put on that leads to a $0 recovery for the plaintiff, but it allows for more of like a comparative fault situation, okay, like, okay, 50-50 thing or whatever, da da, all that stuff, or you know, other arguments that just might limit the damages that you would have to pay if that first defense took the L and lost, okay? There are a lot here that I think could have been used, okay? There are a lot here. There are a lot of other angles that could have been used, I think, like strategy-wise. And I understand we are in a small tizzy, in a small county, in a small town, okay, in Iowa, which I do very much agree with the defendant's attorney's choice to push for the jury being, you know, people from the community, like basically the jury pool being selected specifically from these counties and nowhere else. They really wanted that hometown flair, okay, to basically more so understand and maybe just like the people, right? Like the way of life. If it's a farm town, some bumfuck county in Iowa, yeah, there's going to be people in farms with guns and shotguns, specifically 20 gauge ones. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's what I wanted to point out. It's just kind of, it's not funny, okay? It can happen, okay? You can stick to your guns. There's no harm in that. But it's just funny that they were like, no, we are going to win this bitch. We're going to win. We're going all or nothing. We're launching the ball at the half court line. So they pushed for this principle that the law permits the use of a spring gun in a dwelling or warehouse for the purpose of preventing the unlawful entry of a burglar or thief. They pushed for it, okay? Specifically, they argued this point, this principle was true and sound when they disagreed with three of the court's jury instructions, okay? For those of you who don't know, jury instructions are argued about to the house between plaintiff, defendant, between prosecution and the defense, like the house, okay? In criminal trials and civil trials, 100%. Because the jury, okay, is given and is basically taught the law, okay? The law that they need to apply. And think about the ways that attorneys can argue the fuck out of every single word and clause and phrase that is used in giving the jury those instructions of like, hey, you guys, so this is the law you need to apply. Because remember, these jury trials aren't just like, oh yeah, they should be fucked. Right? There's a reason why the jury came to the conclusion at the trial level that the Brineys should pay Katko. And it's not because they just felt bad, RIP, for his tibia, for his tib. They took the law, they read the law that was given to them that basically says, hey, here are the elements of the claims that Katko is alleging, these people, right, broke, that they did wrong under the law. Your job is to apply the law to the facts and see how it all plays out. See if they really did indeed, you know, commit negligence, commit whatever, okay, da, 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 all these things, okay? In this case, it was like, what, battery, right? Assault and bat, like, you know, grievous harm, using deadly force, like all that shit, okay? Yada, yada. So defendants took issue with three of the instructions that were drafted by, you know, plaintiff and defense. Like, it's a whole, like, argument, okay? Like, the plaintiffs will draft, like, the jury instructions, whatever, each side will give the judge draft jury instructions, and then the judge will, like, decide, and then everyone will argue about it, and they'll have objections. That's why you wonder why trials take so fucking long. The defendants, Brineys, took issue, they argued about three of the jury instructions. They were jury instructions 2, 5, and 6, which we'll get into. They did take no issue with the trial court's statement of the issues or to the other instructions that were given to the jury prior to them rendering a verdict, okay? In the statement of issues, the trial court said that Marvin Katko and his companion did indeed commit a felony when they broke into and entered the Briney's house, okay? It's like, that's the statement. They did do that, period. Jury reads it and says, okay, gathered. I can understand that as fact, right? Because the jury is also very limited on what they, right? You need to know this, and this is fact, and this is truth. Everything else you can decide for yourself, but this is fact, and this is truth. That's what the statement of issues is that's given to the jury, okay? Hi, these are the ones you're not going to argue about, right? You're not going to sit in the back of the jury room and argue about whether or not Katko committed a felony. We're just going to tell you that he did, okay? In instruction 2, the court referred to the early case history of the use of spring guns and stated that under the law, their use was prohibited except to prevent the commission of felonies of violence and where human life is in danger. The instruction included a statement that breaking and entering is not a felony of violence. This was the instruction, one of the three instructions that the defendants basically argued about and claimed should not have been given to the jury at all, okay? Instruction 5 stated, quote, you are hereby instructed that one may use reasonable force in the protection of his property, but such right is subject to the qualification that one may not use such means of force as will take human life or inflict great bodily injury. Such is the rule, even though the injured party is a trespasser and is in violation of the law himself, end quote. Instruction 6 stated, quote, an owner of premises is prohibited from willfully and intentionally injuring a trespasser by means of force that either takes life or inflicts great bodily injury. And therefore, a person owning a premise, is prohibited. And therefore, a person owning a premises is prohibited from setting out spring guns and similar dangerous devices, which will likely take life or inflict great bodily injury for the purpose of harming trespassers. The fact that the trespasser may be acting in violation of the law does not change the rule. The only time when such conduct of setting a spring gun or a similar dangerous device is justified would be when the trespasser was committing a felony of violence or a felony punishable by death, or where the trespasser was endangering human life by his act. End quote. Instruction 7, to which the Brineys made no objection, stated, quote, to entitle the plaintiff to recover for compensatory damages, the burden of proof is upon him, so upon Marvin, to establish by a preponderance of the evidence each and all of the following propositions. Number one, that defendants erected a shotgun trap in a vacant house on land owned by defendant Bertha L. Briney on or about June 11, 1967, which fact was known only to them, to protect household goods from trespassers and thieves. Number two, that the force used by defendants was in excess of that force reasonably necessary, and which persons are entitled to use in the protection of their property. Three, that plaintiff was injured and damaged and the amount thereof. Four, that plaintiff's injuries and damages resulted directly from the discharge of the shotgun trap, which was set and used by defendants, end quote. The overwhelming weight of legal authority, both textbook and case law, supports the trial court's statement of the applicable principles of law. So what I just read to you is not the trial court calling an audible and deciding law on their own. Obviously, they need to every jury in every case and every trial, civil or criminal, okay? They have to summarize what's already true and what the law is, okay, for the jury in a way that makes sense. We're not going to give the jury literally a 350-page law school textbook on fucking self-defense and the defense of property and qualified immunity and privileges and defenses and da-da-da and say, yeah, apply this bitch. We are going to explain it to them in layman's terms. When someone appeals a verdict, okay, in civil court or a conviction in criminal court, they can appeal on the grounds that the jury instructions were wrong, okay? Like the jury convicted me or the jury rendered a verdict against me for damages, all right, based on law that was incorrect or based on instructions that was incorrectly interpreting the law or based on instructions that were so whack and incorrect and fucked up that basically that shit should be overturned or, you know, remanded or whatever, right? Like should be modified, all that shit. That is the grounds upon which the Brineys objected to three of these instructions, okay? Instructions 2, 5, and 6, the reason why they kept appealing, okay? They were appealing that shit. They were claiming that no, that shit is not right. That summary of the law on, you know, protecting property, whatever the fuck, is incorrect, is wrong, is inaccurate, and should not be kosher. And indeed, this is what the law actually was at the time and in many places still is, okay? The law has always placed a higher value upon human safety than upon mere rights and property. It is the accepted rule that there is no privilege to use any force calculated to cause death or serious bodily injury to repel the threat to land or chattels, meaning property, things, okay, land or property, unless there is also such a threat to the defendant's personal safety as to justify self-defense. Spring guns and other man-killing devices are not justifiable against a mere trespasser or even a petty thief. They are privileged only against those upon whom the landowner, if he were present in person, would be free to inflict injury of the same kind, okay? So you're really rolling the dice when it comes to booby traps, okay? The boobly dooblies. Because if you set a boobly doobly that you would not have been able to use in the exact scenario if you were sitting on this bed with your finger on the trigger, okay, and that person came into the room and you were physically there, then you are frick-frack paddywhacked, okay? You are gambling that whomst-ever is going to set off this boobly trap is going to be someone who's committing a violent felony and is going to be someone who would totally, in that scenario, have given you the legal right to use deadly self-defense, deadly force self-defense, okay? Because this wasn't just like, oh, a booby trap in like Home Alone where a bucket swings and like, you know, knocks over water and like ruins their, whatever, okay? Yeah, a lot of the boobly traps in Home Alone were dead ass, deadly fucking devices. And for sure, this motherfucker would have been in the can, would have been in the can, okay? But he's also physically fucking there, okay? He's physically there and they're obviously about to like employ deadly force. Like they were doing crazy shit. Like, he's a kid alone, whatever. Okay. This wasn't just like, oh, a bat's going to come out and like maybe hit you in the legs a little. Like, no, not really going to be deadly force objectively under the law. This was a fucking 20 gauge shotgun aimed intentionally at someone's legs. Like, they measured that bitch. They stood there and were like, legs? Yeah. Well, actually, I want to do stomach. You should do legs. Come on. Let's hit him right in the gut. No, babe. Hit him in the legs, which literally saved them from a fucking murder charge. Like, that's wild. Listen to your fucking wife. Listen to your fucking wife. Okay. So thankfully, the law has already decided and had already correctly concluded many a year ago, way before Katko versus Briney was decided in 1971. Okay. This is like, I'm talking about like 1800s type shit. Okay. When we all just collectively decided in the law that, wait, yeah, so we're just going to say right now that the value of human life and limb and tibia and fibia and femur, not only to the individual's concerns in each case, okay, going on, but also to society, so outweighs the interest in the possessor of land or property or chattel, okay, things, that we think that they shouldn't really be allowed to literally employ deadly force just because property is threatened, a building is threatened, right? Even a home is threatened, okay, to a certain extent, unless there is actually a reasonable belief, objectively reasonable belief by the person, okay, engaging in that deadly force, that their life and limb is at risk. That's why you often see in burglary cases, okay, go to episode 12 of Rebuttal. It's called The Smile and Wave Boys, How to Get Away with Burglary. You'll learn all about burgling, okay, and nighttime dwelling house, okay, breaking, you'll learn what a breaking is, an entry is, okay, commit a felony therein is, okay, all of that. Of course, okay, when someone is burgling your fucking dwelling, your residence, okay, and in such a way, okay, they're literally breaking in your fucking house, okay, whether it be in the middle of the night, whatever, and your family's there, whatever, or like you're terrified, you think someone's like coming in to like attack you, whatever, or this, whatever, all that shit. You employing deadly force to defend yourself in that situation when you're present in the home, that we're not saying that you can't do that. Like, that's not what this is. And that's why so many people have misinterpreted Katko versus Briney. People were in this outrage in the 1970s going, oh, you can't protect your home now. You know what I mean? Like, oh, wow, like, this is fucking crazy. Da-da-da-da-da. No, like, the court was literally citing to, like, established principles of law that we already knew were fact. The trial court was just, like, summarizing that shit. It was just saying, yeah, like, you know, the extra element that y'all weren't even fucking there, and this was a boobly trap, boobly doobly, and it shot his tibia off, and he was going into your house to collect jars of jam for his antique collection and didn't have a weapon. Those are not gonna be great for y'all. Like, those facts are not gonna bode well. And whatever, you know what I mean? Like, look, like, we're the messengers here. Like, we're the messengers of the law. Like, y'all need to pay this man for his fucking medical bills. What in the fuck? You get it. Okay, you get it. The ultimate rule and the rule black letter law that y'all need to remember, okay, if you want to Indiana Jones your hot tub down a fucking hallway because you're petty and bitter and angry, is that, quote, a possessor of land cannot do indirectly and by a mechanical device that which, were he present, he could not do immediately and in person. Therefore, he cannot gain a privilege to install for the purpose of, quote, protecting his land from intrusions harmless to the lives and limbs of the occupiers or users of it, a mechanical device whose only purpose is to inflict death or serious harm upon such as may intrude by giving notice of his intention to inflict by mechanical means and indirectly harm which he could not, even after request, inflict directly were he present. End quote. In addition to the boobly-doobly's of like a literal spring gun, okay, which like you open a door and it trigger and it hits you, okay, you also cannot go into the medieval time flavor of protecting your land. Like, digging a moat around your house, filling the moat with water and crocodiles or piranhas or sharks or maybe spikes at the bottom, and basically hoping, fingers crossed, that the people who are trying to get into your house, whether they be trespassers or whatever, okay, fall into, tumble into it. Design your land so that when they tumbly-dumbly, serious bodily injury or death, okay? You cannot, what it's called, arrange your premises intentionally so as to cause death or serious bodily harm to a trespasser, specifically to a trespasser, okay? You have a duty to not kill people even if they're trying to commit crimes in your land. Like you just do, okay? You cannot intentionally place dangerous conditions on your land so that even a trespasser would be frick, crack, patty, whacked in them. I know. Freedom. USA doesn't have it, right? Damn. I always wanted to kill people at will. Too fucking bad. Like, goddamn. God fucking damn. The possessor may, of course, take some steps to repel a trespass, of course, with fencing, with signs, electric fucking fencing, right? Like you could have crazy fucking shit to protect your shit, okay? Alarms, all of that. Yeah, if he is present also, he may use force to do so, but only that amount which is reasonably necessary to basically repel, okay? Get the fuck out, all right? Moreover, if the trespass threatens harm to property only, even a theft of property, the possessor would not be privileged to use deadly force ever. Like, you can't do that. If the person is literally rolling up and going, I'm trying to steal a jelly jar, and then you blow his head off, ooh, that's your, can't do that. Okay, you can't do that. At the time that Katko versus Briney was decided in the Iowa Supreme Court in 1971, this had been a copy and paste of several other decisions that had been entered in Iowa specifically, right? Because they're applying Iowa law here, even though this law was very much commonly, okay, the same across the board, across many boards. In Hooker versus Miller, for example, another Iowa case, the Supreme Court of Iowa held that a defendant vineyard owner was liable for damages resulting from a spring gun shot, even though the plaintiff was a trespasser and there to steal grapes. Quote, this court has held that a mere trespass against property other than a dwelling is not a sufficient justification to authorize the use of deadly force, blah, 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 blah. The facts in Allison versus Fiscus, another Iowa case, are interesting and very similar to Katko versus Briney. There, a plaintiff's right to damages was recognized for injuries received when he feloniously broke a door latch and started to enter the defendant's warehouse with the intent to steal. As he entered, a trap of two sticks of dynamite buried under the doorway by the owner was set off and plaintiff seriously injured. It's giving Wile E. Coyote. Like, it's giving Looney Tunery when it comes to these traps, you know? Like, I feel like I'm literally watching Cartoon Network and waiting for some big canyon, you know what I mean? Some track to go off, whatever. Like, some guy's gonna be exploded out of a cannonball, whatever. Like, that's what's so funny to me is I'm like, damn. The boobly-doobly traps, I know it's very serious and sad that people get very injured, but like, in reading about them does sound like a bit. In Starkey versus Dameron, a plaintiff was allowed to recover compensatory and punitive damages for injuries received from a spring gun, which the defendant, who was a filling station operator, had concealed in an automatic gasoline pump as protection against thieves. Like, holy shit. Imagine just trying to fill up your car real quick. Absolutely get your shit rocked. In Phelps versus Hamlet, a Texas Civil Court of Appeals case, a defendant had rigged a bomb inside his outdoor theater so that if anyone came through the door, the bomb would explode. The court reversed the plaintiff's recovery because of an incorrect instruction, but at page 426 of their opinion said, quote, while the law authorizes an owner to protect his property by such reasonable means as he may find to be necessary, considerations of humanity preclude him from setting out, even on his own property, traps and devices dangerous to the life and limb of those whose appearance and presence may be reasonably anticipated, even though they may be trespassers, end quote. That is from Texas. So everyone can fuck off with your chat, okay? This is all common sense that oftentimes is not employed in Texas, but was in that scenario. The U.S. Supreme Court had also, by the time of Katko versus Briney, already had chat on this issue. Okay. That's why Katko versus Briney is an Iowa Supreme Court case. It never went up to the U.S. Supreme Court because their writ of certiorari was denied. The U.S. Supreme Court was like, It's giving, we've done this before. Like, we've done this dance. I've seen this song before, seen this dance before, seen this film before. Okay. In addition to civil liability, many jurisdictions at this time had already held that a landowner was criminally liable for serious injuries or homicide caused by spring guns or other set devices. The court lists many. Okay. One in Ohio, a melon thief shot by a spring gun. Another in Virginia, a policeman killed by spring gun when he opened an unlocked front door of defendant's shoe repair shop. Another one in Washington, a murder conviction for death from spring gun set in a trunk. Another one in Missouri, boy killed by spring gun attached to window of defendant's chili stand. Another one that was out of the Supreme Court, intruder shot by spring gun when he broke and entered vacant house, manslaughter conviction of owner was affirmed. And in another one in Washington, a murder conviction affirmed for death of an intruder into a boarded up cabin in which owner had set a spring gun. In Wisconsin, Oregon, and England, the use of spring guns and similar devices is specifically made unlawful by statute at this time. If you already in this episode didn't already kind of have the public policy commentary thoughts in your noggin, those are them, okay? Because the legality of using traps, spring guns, all that shit can only lead to disaster and death and serious bodily injury and harm to so many people who didn't deserve to have their lives taken away. There is not a single crime in this country, including murder, that sentences you at that moment in that millisecond to death. There's not. No amount of felonies, okay, felonious things that you could do in this country, okay, especially against a home, property, whatever, breaking into a fucking chili stand. Yeah, that's not, calm the fuck down, okay, calm down. We would rather have your chili stand be burgled the fuck, the house, than to have a child killed. So no boobilies, no boobily doobilies. And that's a very good public policy thing to have in place, right? Right. Amazing. Despite the fierce battle lines that this case has drawn in law school classrooms for the last 50 fucking years and around the country in chats about home invasions and self-defense and defense of property, da da da, the Iowa Supreme Court in its decision did not struggle at all, reaching its decision to affirm the verdict that was entered against the Brineys, okay, for all of this money. For the punitive damages and the compensatory damages, okay? 20 grand and plus 10 grand, okay? Against the Brineys and in favor of Katko. And Katko's attorney knew this, okay? He knew this shit was going to be cut and dry. So, in fact, when he filed this lawsuit on behalf of his plaintiff, okay, Marvin Katko, he didn't ask for a jury trial. So, when you in civil court, okay, you need to ask for that, all right? You do not have the absolute constitutional right to a jury trial, like, unless you, like, you gotta ask, okay? You gotta say, like, demand for a jury trial, like, in the caption, whatever the fuck, okay? And so when he filed it, he literally didn't want one. They were like, they were gonna go for a bench trial, meaning that the trial was just gonna be exclusively tried in front of the judge, and the judge is going to be the judge and jury, all right? These happen all the time. Because he believed that this is a purely legal issue, and it, like, the, like, a jury, we're gonna have to teach the jury shit that is already, we already know is very clear, okay? This is cut and dry. Obviously, it was the Brineys, okay, the defendants, who demanded a jury. They were like, give us a fucking jury trial. Like, we want, because they were hoping that they could appeal to the people in the community who wanted to defend their homes in such a manner. But while Marvin Katko's attorney, Gerald Heslinga, did not want a jury trial, when obviously the defendants demanded it, so it was going forward, they were going to get one, he was very pleased with the 12 that he got, which were all women. And he said this in an interview later, that as he saw it, the all-female jury was essential to the verdict. This is just what he said, okay? He said that Mr. Katko, Marvin, our boy Marv, connected with the all-female jury because Marvin was good-looking, likable, pleasant, had a religious background. His wounds were still very evident, so his leg, his tibia, and he readily admitted his wrong and made no attempt to justify his actions, all right? All qualities of a very likable defendant, which is what you need when your client is on trial, holy fuck. And the Brineys didn't score any points with the jury when their lawyer wanting to demonstrate that nobody likes to have their belongings stolen, reached into the jury box and snatched a woman's purse. I might be a young lawyer, a baby lawyer whose eyeliner is exhausting, right? But I'm gonna pause it to say that you don't want to fucking do that to really gain traction with a sympathetic jury, okay? They're going to convict your ass, all right? Get your hands on my fucking Gucci. You're going to jail, okay? And I'm not saying that's correct, but I'm saying if the juror said later, yeah, I'm pissed he took my fucking purse, like, what the fuck? Is anything ever that serious? The answer is no, it's not. Okay, this is a civil case about a fucking somebody breaking into someone's house and getting their shit rocked, their tibia blown to smithereens by a fucking spring gun. Okay, why are you snatching my purse? Back the fuck up. Okay, that's what I would have said. Back the fuck up. So he's a moron. But regardless of whether that was good or bad, okay, even if this attorney would have been great, brilliant, amazing for the Brinies, under the law, like, still very cut and dry. So the Iowa Supreme Court issued its opinion, affirming the verdict and saying that yes, the Brinies did indeed lose, and they do indeed owe Katko all of those damages. That, of course, does not prevent and did not prevent Mrs. Briney from filing a separate lawsuit against Marvin Katko for damages from the trespass, okay? Whatever. Like, you can do that separate and apart from all this bullshit. That's fine. But obviously, the damages that she could possibly have gotten and claimed were going to be much less than the 30 grand that he got, you know what I mean, from this lawsuit. Like, whatever, okay? They were pissed regardless, right? They were pissed regardless, but Marvin got his day, and judgment was affirmed for him. But just weeks after the decision, the Des Moines Register published letters to the editor that supported both sides. One reader defended the Brinies, quote, "I believe it is time to rewrite our laws and to somehow change our courts if this is the protection that a law-abiding citizen is to receive." Another called the decision the most nefarious thing that has happened in the annals of jurisprudence. Is it annals or annals? God. Well, it's whatever I just said now. But Katko had plenty of defenders too. One described the decision as, quote, "the only sane reaction possible to what I consider a despicably cowardly act," which is tea. What also fueled the fire for people getting pissed off about this case and the court's decision was that Katko's injury was misreported by the United Press International Wire Service as having taken place in the Briney's actual residence, where they lived, where they dwelled, okay? Like, current residence, all right? That, yes, no one was home for, but they reported it as, like, someone broke into their actual fucking home, all right? Which, yeah, the decision would not have, I don't think, changed, but I think it led to people kind of getting more pissed and misinterpreting it to be something that it wasn't. Because in response to that report and then this case coming out, several state legislatures, who are morons, politicians, right? They love catching a wave of public turmoil, all right? For their own benefit. Several states introduced what were called, quote, "briny bills" for self-defense, which was not an issue in the case at all. Literally not at all. This article on it is like, which was not fucking an issue. The Nebraska Legislature Act stating that, quote, "no person shall be placed in jeopardy for protecting by any means necessary himself, his family, or his real estate property" was overturned. Thank you. Like, thank God, in 1971. So, like, basically a bunch of states that had literally no connection, not a single piece of business to do with the state of Iowa's fucking decisions, and that heard about this case in incorrect terms, started passing laws that, literally reading that sentence is so fucking bonkers that that even for a single day in this country, this law was active and stood. "No person shall be placed in jeopardy for protecting by any means necessary himself, his family, or his real estate property." That's just the purge. Like, that's what that is. Because what the fuck? Okay, I'm obsessed with that broad language. Let me literally drive through a fucking crowd real quick and say I was protecting my car's ability to drive through this bitch. Let me literally machete everyone who comes to my door. My family, my real estate property, let me buy up a fucking house just to kill people. Like, Wow. I love when politicians are morons. It literally, it makes me feel so much smarter. Because I'm like, come fucking on. Even like the most uneducated person, all right, it doesn't take a fucking law degree to read that sentence and go, that could have some crazy implications, huh? Yeah. Yeah, it could. Overturned by the courts. Of course, the courts were like, no, stop. Time out. No, thank you. It's a bit of an overreaction. All right. 4 years after the case was decided, Edward Briney was asked if he would change anything about the situation. Briney replied, quote, there's one thing I'd do different, though. I'd have aimed that gun a few feet higher. God damn it. Holy fuck. They hated that man. Marvin Katko's own home was burgled in 1976, with burglars making off with several valuables. Katko would later end his own life on November 15th, 1994, using a gun in the front yard of his home. So ultimately a very tragic end to Marvin Katko's life. But by the nature of this field, his name will never be forgotten. And that case will always be taught forever and ever, infinity, because it starts a big debate about self-defense, defense of property, all this stuff. And the ultimate, I think, issue that people are talking about, really, okay, the only issue when you get down to the core of it is whether or not people who commit crimes are valued and deserve to live. Quite literally. We have such a stigma and stereotype in this country against anyone who has ever been charged or convicted of a crime. It doesn't matter whether the person is not your perfect hero, not your perfect villain, right? They could commit crimes that are fully selfish and fully shitty and fully wrong, right? It's not always the Aladdin stealing bread to feed someone, the Robin Hood stealing from the rich to feed the poor type shit, okay? Very rarely do you have those. Often you have people who, yeah, commit crimes, okay? It doesn't mean that they deserve to die, and it doesn't mean that they deserve to have their entire life irrevocably changed beyond that which we've already made in our laws punishment, okay? Did the crime, they do the time, they should be considered as equal to everyone else. And that, I think, is something that is very much brushed over in law school classes when we talk about this, when we debate this, when people talk about it. Because yeah, they get into the big public policy issues of like defense of property and self-defense and XYZ and whatever, but come on. You're just pissed that he broke the law and you think that he deserved it because he broke the law, you know? Like, it's obscene. It's insane. Because also what people don't think about when they talk about this debate is 911 responders, emergency responders, handymen, people who are trying to get into the house because they're maybe like running out from a lightning storm and they see a house and they see the doors unlocked and they open it. Like, there are so many scenarios where people can enter your house and not be thieves or criminals in the sense that you think they are, right? I don't know why you think you can live in a society in this world, in the United States of America, and genuinely believe as your NRA bootlicking, MAGA thumpering, right to bear arms, Second Amendment type bullshit, Blue Lives Matter type bullshit, why you genuinely believe that there is not a single scenario that is probably more likely, okay, where someone could walk into your home and not be committing a crime. Okay, like be for real, or not have malice intent. The amount of 911 responders, first responders that have been injured from these boobly dooblies is more than the criminals, quote unquote, that have been hurt. Okay, the children that are hurt, because the amount, most trespassers are fucking kids. You know what I mean? Taking a new path through a yard, whatever, and people build a huge manhole. You can't do that. Like, you can't fucking do that, all right? Because we think people should answer, be responsible, have consequences for the crimes that they do commit, if they do break the law indeed. And yeah, you do have a right to enforce those laws against someone else by, oh, I don't know, filing a claim or lawsuit or, you know, right, having someone be held criminally liable, all right, for doing something. But you don't have the right, the Rizzy, to suddenly make vandalism a capital punishment, capital crime. You just don't. My rebuttal for this episode is that, you know, the entire reason why one of the most famous cases in the legal field even happened, even existed, even occurred is quite literally because an old married couple in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, genuinely believed that the ghosts of the wife's parents were still living in an old abandoned farmhouse on 80 acres of land that no one was living on. And so they kept the farmhouse, the dilapidated rundown farmhouse that they did not live in, no one lived in, fully furnished with valuables, fully stocked kitchen food, everything. Because they believed that the ghosts, the spirits of the wife's parents needed vibe and motif and feng shui and appetizers at all times. Literally, that's why. And because of that, each time this abandoned farmhouse was broken into, all right, by people who were like, look at that very abandoned farmhouse with very high weeds growing around it that no one is ever in, ever infinity. The Brinies, these people, this wife and husband, were so mad. They were so angry. They were pissed because people would break in and be like, oh, there's shit here, and then take it and leave because no shit. Okay. So those people, that husband and wife, were so angry that people kept breaking in to the farmhouse that no one lived in, except for the ghosts of the wife's parents, that instead of just taking all of the valuables out of the house so that it would literally be a non-issue for everything to be broken into, because again, they lived like miles away. This wife and husband lived miles away from this fucking abandoned farmhouse. Instead of doing that, okay, because of course, like the ghosts need their vibe, they need their pad, they need their motif. They said, let's rig a 20 gauge shotgun to go off the next time a motherfucker tries it. And let's rig it in the bedroom of this farmhouse so that it's not even when they get through the front door. Oh, no, no, no. And we're also not going to put up a sign that says like, hey, like you're about to get shot. No, we're going to make it so that they can literally, hopefully, pinkies, fingers crossed, get their shit absolutely rocked, regardless of why they're in the house. Like, even if they're just going in to just check it out, like, right, some teenagers, like, looking at an abandoned haunted house haunted by these ghosts of, like, right, some old people are putting jam on toast that's there, even though it's moldy, whatever. Yeah, we're going to make sure that they get their shit absolutely blown to smithereens. Literally exploded his tibia bone, like, literally, like, pew, and, like, literally covering the rug. No one was home, right? No one was home because there's a wire was rigged because, again, no one lived there. Yeah, one of the most famous cases in the legal field in law school that you ever learn about, that you talk about, that you debate about for like a whole day is this fucking case. And it's just because a husband and wife were kind of fucking weird, but weird in a way that made it everyone else's problem. So that's what we're here for. That's what this podcast is all about. All right. It's what this podcast is all about. Rebuttal Pod. Thank you. I love you. I appreciate you. Subscribe, like, comment, subscribe. But even if you don't, I don't mind. I love y'all. And I hope that I get to meet you one day. If I ever see you, if you ever see me in public, like a lot of people have for like a couple years now, but like recently it's really been a banger to see y'all. Please say hi. I love saying hi. I love meeting you. Yeah. Bye. See you next time.